Welcome back to the Everything is a Primary Source podcast, the show where we get history through pop culture. We'll be taking a look through the TV Guide from 1994-1995 for the short-lived animated comedy The Critic, starring John Lovitz, to see what it can tell us about that time in history. So it's really nice to have a familiar face at a conference that's states away. We're in Tennessee, but I have Jeff from the New Hampshire Council for the Social Studies in our own backyards from each other here. And have you been enjoying the conference so far?
I have been enjoying the conference. I've kind of had a duality where I'm a board member of the local organization, The Affiliated Council, but also my own professional development as a teacher. So it's been a good experience. It's good to see you too, Eric.
It is. I mean, well, it is great seeing me. It's so much fun, even if you know it's going to happen, to see a familiar face when you're out. Have you ever run into somebody that you know unexpectedly far away from home? Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, one time. It was actually in Disney World a little less than a year ago. A student that I had previous years, I'm walking out of like Pecos Bill and there's this, at this point now, 20-something-year-old woman in her family. Yeah, it's like, I know you.
That's great. And I guess that's a teacher thing.
Yeah.
Is that we kind of, every year, produce probably like between 95 and 120 possibilities of that and send it out into the world and be like, well, there's a good chance. And I love situations, you know, thankfully for you, it wasn't terribly long, between the time. But I like it when former students are working at places where they have to wear name tags. Because then I can be like, hey, there's Joe. How you doing, Joe? And,
a lot of times you do remember that person, but you just can't come up with the name right away. But you recognize.
Because we have space in our brain, I would say, and I think it's actually pretty impressive, for about 100 names at a time, which most people can't do. But I think that's pretty good for a teacher to keep one bank of them. But then you have to make room for the next group. And when that happens, unfortunately, it could be kids in your own school, and you're like, I don't know your name right now because I had you last semester, and but speaking of references, we're going to be talking about a cartoon that basically built this entire short-lived series on references to other pop culture, particularly movies, and that would be one of my favorite cartoons, and that's The Critic. Why did you choose The Critic?
So, I just remember liking The Critic as a kid in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then it's one of those programs where I watched it again as an adult, right? And a young adult, maybe in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And you just pick up on nuance. It's a show that references pop culture. So I feel like as I became older and then would watch the reruns, mm-hmm. I just understood it more. And it's just, it's clever.
And it's a very, they do rapid pop culture references throughout each episode. So if listeners have never seen The Critic, first of all, go find it. I think you can find it pretty easily on even YouTube. But it's John Lovitz voices Jay Sherman, who is a film critic living in New York. And he has a show it's supposed to be like a CNN type channel. For some reason they have, his Critics Corner. And he is like the ultimate loser with the ladies, and people don't even like him as a film critic. And he juggles his home life and his relationship with his parents. And it's great. And throughout, not only just on his show itself, but throughout the series, they'll have references to movies. And it's just like The Simpsons, which is kind of born from and related to, where you're absolutely right. In later time, you're like, oh, I didn't see that movie. I didn't get that reference back then, but I've subsequently seen the movie, and now I get it. Now that joke. Was there any movies that were brought up on The Critic that you saw because of The Critic?
Oh, that's a good point. I can't think off the top of my head. I'm sure. Or there was something that The Critic made fun of that I had maybe already seen and thought, like, now I get it.
Right.
I see that, whatever we're poking fun at.
Yeah.
I remember, and I think it is like akin to shows like The Simpsons, where it's just like Jay Sherman's absurd.
Yeah.
Right. And he has everything. It stinks. Right?
Yeah, it stinks.
but there's like a cynical stereotype personality there. And, yeah. And it's just...
He's a lovable guy. I think he's great. Yeah. And everything Lovitz touches is gold to me. I love John Lovitz. I think he's just one of the... Like, anything he's in, just like Phil Hartman.
Yes.
And, like, it would be good without them, but then it just made that much better. It's guaranteed to be awesome if either... And they were good friends, so...
Their delivery. That's a good example.
Hello! You know, just like that Lovitz... Yeah, and they both had the perfect voice for the time period. And so the question that we chose for this podcast karaoke is, who is the intended audience or user of this? And would you say it was the same exact audience of The Simpsons, or was it a different, maybe slightly different demographic that they were shooting for?
I think that there's overlap. Mm-hmm. I think that there's overlap audience with Simpsons critic, King of the Hill, and then even maybe into South Park and Family Guy to some extent. But I do think that the critic, where The Simpsons is a general satire, this family satire, mm-hmm. people can relate to it. The critic is a little bit more nuanced. I think it's geared towards the person who wants a little bit more, you know, poking fun, a little bit more, I don't want to say rough humor or rough satire, but the people who appreciate random humor, right?
Yeah.
Not that The Simpsons doesn't have that kind of thing.
But they take it to a new level on the critic.
Yeah.
It's, you know, The Simpsons started that trend in their writing of referencing something, doing the quick cutaway, and you might see it. Later on, Family Guy took that, and that became the basis for their whole show, basically. It was, remember the time, and they would flashback, cut away, and see the little thing that they're referencing. King of the Hill rarely actually did a cutaway. They would reference things, but just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, it made it that much funnier, because, like, remember that time I wrote that hymn? You know, just like, what? And, like, I would like to hear that story, but you just left it there, and for my imagination... I think you said it perfectly. The Simpsons is relatable because it's a family. You know, 2.5 kids, man, you know, working class guy, stay-at-home mom, very relatable to a late 80s, early 90s, middle America. Jay Sherman's a film critic in New York. There's probably about 12 people in the entire globe at that time, that even less that had TV audience. So it's not a relatable character through their occupation, but relatable in that the way he sees media, and that he does not like most things, that he is highly critical. And for a 90s audience, I mean, that tells us something about the time period, is that that was really when our media was hitting almost overload status. You know, at the beginning of the century, we had the rise of mass media with film, of course, and radio, and then magazines in the 20s and really taking off there. But once you hit that internet age, or even before that, the home video age, where we could watch and rewatch things over and over again, and we're just constantly this huge, almost like landfill amount of stuff to sort through, it makes this show possible. Like, we get the jokes more.
Yeah, and I think just in, like, the pop culture in the post-World War II era, right? Mm-hmm. And we get to the 90s, and here's Jay Sherman. And then even some of those other characters that we just talked about. It takes a... You don't have to be brilliant to watch these shows, but you have to have a lot of frame of reference.
Right? Yeah,
we just talked about
absolutely.
That's what the shows do. But, like, the critic seems... It's a New York show, and I know it's an animated show, but it plays on some New York or East Coast tropes. The same way that King of the Hill, it's like, man, they're sort of making fun of Texans, but also Texans are delightful, and they're portraying that.
And a lot of Texans love that show.
Yeah.
It gives them agency. It gives them voice.
Yeah, so I think it just kind of going back to the who's the intended audience, like, I think it's for anybody who's interested in that type of humor and wants to unpack those layers of humor, but it's representative of cultural nuance, I think, in the country. And so if you take that show, The Critic, and Jay Sherman against Hank Hill versus Homer Simpson, they're all different people, right? And I think that you have an educated population. I think people, and you and my, in our demographic or age range of high school and middle school education, we were being taught to ask questions, and now you have these creative processes on television that are, I get that cultural reference in a way that maybe previous generations wouldn't have had that exposure, right? And sort of like that rise of mass media from the 1900s, but then the proliferation of just cable and reruns and all of these things go into these subtle cultural acknowledgments of maybe people who were teenagers, young 20s in the 90s. They just get more.
I have a feeling it was the same audience that Mystery Science Theater 3000 was geared towards. You know, running commentary, making fun of, you know, bad movies. That's the same audience as Beavis and Butthead, who were doing the same thing to music videos. I would even extend it over to, like, the musical world. I remember the artist Beck being described as the hipster who raided his parents' record collection and just pulled from it the things that he thought he could work
with.
That's
good, yeah.
And the Beastie Boys would be another example, too, where I actually read from their DJ, Mixmaster Mike, he said that every time they went to a new city on tour, the first stop would be to the used record store. And they would just spend hours going through all of the media, records in particular, of course, but tapes and anything that they get their hands on. And then you hear it in their music later on. And not even from them. I mean, the Beastie Boys are the MCs, but the DJ behind there is mixing together beats and sounds and then little clips from movies or a TV show, little, you know, references like that. And it's just, it's so 90s because we're in that era where we have no choice but to be just covered in pop culture. We're finally, and we have enough time on our hands, leisure time, to, and I know it's like a Gen X, I assume Gen X is like the intended audience because they're young adults in the 90s and that's like who they're going for. It's like the Gen X almost stereotype of them sitting on their couch and just kind of like, this is stupid, this is dumb, and making fun of it. And so these shows are like doing just exact same thing. I also, you mentioned about the geographic components of it being a New York show, but I think it's the second episode that I think she's like a stylist or something like that, works for the company, and she's from the South. She's from Georgia or something.
That's right.
And she, maybe even Tennessee, actually. We're here in Tennessee. I should ask around and be like, hey, you know the show The Critic from the 90s? Isn't that character? Her and her daughter move up to New York, and then the head of the company, the media company, he's like a Ted Turner type guy, but he's in New York. But he even talks to him. He's like, you know, those of us in, you know, from the South always get a bad reputation up here. They think it's all bumpkins, and then the country bear jamboree comes out
right,
of the side
country.
Of his.
That's the
and he's like,
reference.
What's that? He's like, oh, you know. Where are the bears who sing for? And it's like, he's like, I don't know why they think that way. But it's like that, I think, was an attempt to not just make another New York show, because that's, you know, Friends was in New York. Seinfeld's in New York. Before that, years before, I Love Lucy's in New York. And then, oh, just like Seinfeld, they go to L.A. Jay goes to L.A. in one episode. So it's like, but in that episode where Jay goes to L.A., you see these farmers in the Midwest looking up at the airplane, and the little boy's like, Grandpa, who are... He's like, those are the people who make our movies, and and they even though they look down at us and call us flyover country, and he's like, wait a minute. He's like, and he gets out a shotgun, he shoots up at the plane, and the pilot's like, I apologize. We're getting some of that Midwestern anger at, you know... It'll end soon, you know. And it's like, so they're acknowledging the elitism that exists on each coast towards the middle of the country. And then they invite in a character, a couple of characters that represent the group that is not represented usually on those kinds of shows.
So I think, too, you use like the example of like Friends and Seinfeld. And I love Seinfeld in that New York sort of, but it's... Like those shows, the characters get into hijinks that are very specific to, like, oh, look at this demographic. Oh, this, you know, Phoebe is singing Smelly Cat.
Right.
That's funny. But there's not a lot of, like, depth of substance where Jay, just to go back to Jay Sherman, like, he's angry all the time. Everything stinks. But he's also this great dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
King of the Hill, Hank Hill's a little bit like that, too, where... There is still, there's this elitism, but oh man, Jay Sherman's this flawed dude, but he loves his kid.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think that there is a
and he's a nice
more
guy.
Authentic
he tries
nuance
to
a show like The Critic yeah. than a typical sitcom of that era.
Yeah,
you know?
And they took it to, it's too bad they didn't last very long. I don't know exactly. I know they actually moved one network to the other. I think they started on Fox and ended on ABC or vice versa.
Yeah.
Because they were having a tough time getting an audience beyond, you know, because they weren't on Sundays like The Simpsons were. And even though they tie into The Simpsons, that crossover episode where Jay Sherman shows up on The Simpsons,
I think
it was a promotional thing.
Yeah.
And in true Simpsons manner, they're self-effacing about it. The whole time they're just like making fun of crossover shows and how cheap they are to try to get us to. But it's there's that. There's a tie-in. I think it's interesting because you brought about Seinfeld as being very specific and New York and 30-something singles and that kind of thing. I don't think it's a coincidence that, or just an accident, that the very first scene in King of the Hill, they're talking about Seinfeld.
That's right. And, I wouldn't have remembered that if you didn't just say
it. I watch that show constantly,
yeah,
so it's like
good.
We go back to it, and he's like, hey, those New York boys, you know, and Boom Howard, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, it's almost like acknowledging that they're like, yes, in our world, that show exists, and we recognize that it's not ultra, it's more of like a spectator sport for the rest of the country to look at Yankees, New Yorkers, and make fun of them and how their lives are. And now here's the voice of Texas. Here's the voice ordinary people.
And like you were saying too, like, oh, this is like the rise of, or the, like the 90s or this amalgamation of pop culture, right? Or the rise of, you know, cable in 80s and 90s
and internet,
and all of these choices in internet, and so we're moving towards sort of just these, we're all getting the same thing, right? The homogenization of pop culture, where it's like not just regional pop, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here then you have these shows like King of the Hill or The Critic that are specific to the culture of where these people come from, whereas more so with Friends, yeah, sure, there's hijinks, but their lives are fabulous.
Right.
Right? Jay's got this cool gig, but he's angry.
Right.
Right? His life's not fabulous, but it's pretty fabulous.
Right.
And there's just a more authentic representation of nuance in America, I think.
So it's like on the surface, all these shows are not nuanced, but then when you look at them for their details, they're like, oh, yeah, they're actually very specific. And I really think that these animated shows, and The Critic absolutely took advantage of the fact that they were a cartoon by doing weird, wild stuff, having crazy stuff depicted on the screen, but also utilizing the fact that they could put Jay in all these different locations. He goes to Iraq in one episode, and like all it takes is them just drawing it. They don't have to actually send or make a whole set that looks like he's in Iraq or something like that. When Friends goes to London, yeah, some of it's on a soundstage, but they actually do go to, and that's a huge undertaking to bring an entire crew and cast and everything internationally. The cartoons of that era, and actually that was one of my criticisms of King of the Hill before I fell in love with it when I was a kid, when it first came on. I was like, why is this a cartoon? They could totally do this show with real people because it's not, they don't do anything fantastic with it. But then the details, as time goes on, you're like, oh, yeah, I guess that's why it's a cartoon, because you couldn't have this stuff happen.
It's interesting. Like, we started talking about The Critic, and I think The Critic and King of the Hill are very similar.
Yeah.
I really do. But to your point, like, why is it a cartoon? I think maybe that's what's allowed it to have some staying power, right? Like, you'll go back and watch these shows again, and you'll learn something new, right? That nuance about Jay, that maybe you don't get that about Chandler and Joey and Phoebe when you watch that 100 times over.
And it doesn't get dated as easily.
Right.
If you watch, I mean, sometimes if you watch like a show from the 70s, you know, we're teachers so we can say Welcome Back, Cotter or something like that, you're so distracted just by the fashions.
Right.
And the vision, you know, the way that the lens has, it's like fuzzy and yellowish looking. You're like, I can't even, let alone I don't even get this humor because it's 70s humor. It's not my, you know, it's not what I'm used to. Whereas a cartoon, especially one like this, it doesn't age really as badly. You know, they don't use the technology that we have because it didn't exist back then, but it's not even represented in most cartoons anyway. So it's a timeless thing. It's colorful. It's bright.
Yep.
It has that vibrant feel to it.
And it's clever.
And it's super clever, and it's just like a perfect outlet for it. And unfortunately, I think the reason why it faded away so quickly is because it was just part of that huge wave. There's so many animated shows that were coming out, and you really had to just do, I think audience members are like, I only have so much room for, like we said at the beginning, this room in our heads for names.
Yep.
I only have so much room in my head for all these characters. And at least this one, the critic, he's unlike, as for the aforementioned reasons, any of the other things. And just like Jerry Seinfeld, very few comedians that live in New York watching the show at home, we still laugh at the situation he gets in. Very relatable. Jay Sherman, he's a film critic, but a lot of the relationship stuff he deals with, very relatable. And just his, you know, lovable loser kind of way approach to stuff is a very thing. So we may have just analyzed The Critic more than anybody else ever has.
I don't know, but I think
it was a good one.
Yeah.
And safe travels back to New Hampshire, and you know, it'll be we'll probably run into each other there again. So thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Please rate and follow this podcast wherever you're listening to it right now, and share with everyone you know. You can follow the Everything is a Primary Source podcast on social media, including YouTube and especially Instagram. Show notes, which expound on each episode, and essays about history and pop culture can be found on Substack. The hub for all these things is everything-history.com. Thank you for listening to the EPS podcast, where everything is a primary source.